We're here on business. We can't be bothered. You're bothering us.
I know.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 5, As Bad As It Gets. Now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
They just can't set us up like that. As bad as it gets. Come on now, guys. Have some self-respect. Hello, listeners. We want to tell you before we get into As Bad As It Gets, what is happening on the Patreon. Again with this, episode 153, dropping July 28th, is coming at you. Let's watch Jack Wagner, Cheryl Pollock, and Paul Johansson in Swimsuit, which was written by Robin Schiff, later of Grosse Pointe writing staff fame. It's a Starapalooza. Swimsuit, a film released in 1989, is available on Tubi. We will link that in the show notes. Please join us at againwiththispodcast.com/club for that and so much more. You actually can't believe it. And now let's get into this episode. Speaking of things we can't believe, starting with our C-plot, we're not saying Sam's new caper is convoluted, but it does involve someone physically going to the city of Atlanta to pull it off. First, I'm not 100% sure. I think the B-roll this time shows us Spats standing still out in front of the agency. You can see the visual aids.
Yeah, I looked a few times. I looked.
It's her black. I think it's her blouse and that skirt. I mean, the shoes look different.
I think so, too.
Not in motion. Sure. But yes, I think it's her. Anyway, inside, a giddy Jennifer is hanging off Billy's arm. And when they run into Sam, who is so openly hostile to them and their imminent departure for Italy, they just walk away in the middle of her sentence, which, relatable. And then we watch Sam go back to her desk and pick up the phone in real time in a scene that ends before we see the call. Great editing, guys. In Amanda's office, Jennifer hangs over Billy's shoulder, talking up how incredible he was at dinner with Giorgio the night before. Amanda claims she's sorry to see Billy go, but doesn't really seem like she gives a shit. And Billy squints that it'll be tough to leave, but that he has ideas about who should handle his clients when he's gone. Let me guess, Guy? Amanda cheerfully says she'll make those decisions, actually. Billy's gonna take the rest of the morning to do some errands with Jennifer, and without looking up, Amanda tells him to have a good time. Clip two.
Be back this afternoon. Tomorrow, work on the transition.
If you want, but take my advice. When you're bailing, go ahead and jump. Just don't yap about it.
You know what, Amanda?
Always nice to talk to you, Amanda.
At least when the people in Italy are rude, I won't understand them.
You will eventually. You'll still be a gentleman about it.
Or a sap, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. It's Billy.
As they leave, the camera pans back to Sam on the phone with Jeff. He will be back in Atlanta tomorrow. Clip three.
But I still don't know what you want me to do.
The favor that you promised me.
I know, but...
Oh, please, Jeff. All you have to do is send Billy a fax from Allison Parker. Okay? Allison lives in Atlanta.
Yeah, I got that. But why?
Look, I don't want to get back together with Billy or anything. I'm ready to be happy with you. I just want to make Jennifer and Billy as miserable as possible first. Even things out a little, that's all.
I gotta tell you, Sam, I mean, I just think this is wrong.
One favor. Promised.
Okay.
Okay. All right, now take this down. Dear Billy...
Okay.
You deserve whatever you get, Jeff. You fucking suck. You're worse than her because you're putting up with it.
Yes. And being like, I don't understand why I have to go to Atlanta to do this. And we will get to more of this, but like, it never does make sense. So,
no.
This is also, however, basically the climax of my best friend's wedding, which came out the year before this. But even that was about sending an email that had to be sent from like someone's personal computer at their office. Anyway, the next day, Billy and Jennifer are packing up his office, including a piece of gala committee art we didn't really see. You can see that in the visual aids. The gala committee awards banquet was also where they were right before they fucked the first time. So, yes, they both remember that night fondly. They agree. And then Julie, the eye roll assistant with the Kate Gosselin hair from a few episodes ago, interrupts with an urgent fax from Allison. In rehab, capital R, I have realized I'll always love you. I wish I could see you once more and tell you, if you can't stay with me, at least I would have seen your face one last time. All my love, Allison. And the overkill of this subterfuge is so dumb. Allison could have been in rehab anywhere. And just because this page has a 678 area code typed at the top of it means nothing. Like, it's not like it's one of those automatically generated, like, cover right. sheet things.
It's just, no.
Like, the effort made to for this prop is negative effort. Like, it's amazing. Yeah. Sam could have made up any number, written it on a fax cover sheet, and sent it from, like, another floor of this office, or just printed it and dropped it on his desk when he wasn't there. Like, it's not like Billy's dumbass would have checked into it.
Or call the Kinko's and had them, like, I'm pretty sure that efax.com was already a thing at this point.
Yes.
I'm not going to look it up, but, like, there are so many easier ways to do this than sending your long-suffering sportscaster would-be fiance to Hotlanta to do this stupid task for you, a giant brat and bitch and bore.
Anyway. Billy reads this to himself silently, rushes out without telling Jennifer what it is, and at her desk, Sam smugly watches him leave, and he brings it straight into Amanda, whose hair looks normal again, and orders her to tell him what she knows about it, which is nothing more than what she already said. Clip 4.
I wouldn't pay any attention to what she says here about still loving you.
Amanda, clearly she's in some kind of trouble. You know, and she needs me. You were talking to her. What's her phone number, huh?
Billy, she's in a rehab unit. I already told you that they don't allow her to take calls.
When you talked to her, did she ask for me or about me?
No, not really. This fax is a surprise. But even if she is still hung up on you, don't look back there. I mean, I know what it's like to let your past back into your life, and it can destroy you. So take my advice. Ignore this and appreciate what you have.
Leaving aside the fact that this is very obviously fake, like a phishing, basically spam, but like, why does he keep referring to the fact that Allison, quote, is obviously in trouble? Like, of all the things that I would get from that, trouble is not it.
Mm-mm. I agree. Horny, maybe. And also, like, you know, she's in rehab. They don't allow her to take calls. Like, is that a thing? Maybe it is. I don't know about rehab. It seems like that's a locked psych ward thing more so than somewhere where you've voluntarily checked yourself in, but I admit, I don't know.
I think some programs encourage you to just cut off contact with the outside world for a while to try to reset, but I don't know either. And if they're not letting her make or take calls, why is she faxing up a storm? Not least because this reads like someone who is drunk.
Yes.
Like, is drunk, drunk faxing, so okay.
This place doesn't have phones you can use, but there's a business center with, like, a typewriter.
Why are we thinking about this? Why are we thinking about this?
I don't know.
This?
I'm sorry.
We are dumb.
Then it's that night. Sam's getting drunk alone in her kitchen, wearing an Empire waist camisole and a long satiny skirt, as was, unfortunately, the style at the time, when Jeff calls from his hotel room in presumably Atlanta. She couldn't be better, thanks to him. His fax landed like a bombshell. It was great. So Jeff should be thrilled to have played such an important role in her cunning plan. But clip 5.
You know, Sam, I've been thinking about this all afternoon, and I just feel rotten doing your dirty work for you.
Dirty work? Oh, give off it, Jeff. I'm just getting my fair share of the revenge after the ground glass that Billy pulled me through for the last 4 months.
Maybe, but you know, the Samantha I fell in love with didn't just hurt people for the pleasure of it.
I can't believe you are being so sanctimonious. I am the victim here. Don't you get it?
Yes, Sam, unfortunately I do. Goodbye.
Jeff, what don't you... Oh, don't you hang up on me.
Okay, what is her end game here? Like, other than fucking with Billy, does she think that if she can convince him to, like, go and try and find Allison in Atlanta, like, he'll give up the job he has been offered and accepted, and that it's going to go to her after the way she acted in front of Giorgio, like, at their dinner in the last episode?
First of all, excellent drunk acting from Brooke Langton.
Sure.
I know I've talked shit about her acting. I stand by most of that. This was good. Shit. I don't know why she had to be drunk for this scene, but she sold it.
Yeah.
In response to your question, like, why was Giorgio even still in that apartment 90 seconds after that whole Donnybrook started?
Right.
Do you actually think Italian, quote, Italian food prepared in one of these kitchens is good? Like, just go to a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Turn your phone off. Don't do this.
Yeah.
Her endgame seems really outlandish, but for this show, where no one is professional ever about anything,
mm-hmm.
could work.
Yeah, I guess. So the next day, Billy's going out for a run when Jennifer stops him, demanding a kiss first. But mid-kiss, he flashes back to kissing Allison and emotionally shuts down immediately, claiming to be fine. But when Jennifer peeks out the curtains, she sees Billy sit on the stairs to think. And as we know, he can't do that in motion. That night, Jennifer's so distracted at work that Megan tells her to snap out of it and remember she's nearly on her way to Italy. Jennifer tells her how Billy is pulling away, which she claims he never even did in the Sam era, which he certainly did. But anyway, clip six.
And I know I should just confront him about it and get some kind of answer. I know I'm not crazy.
Well, you are if you do that. You guys are brand new. I mean, don't put it on the line just like that. I mean, by demanding answers about the way he's acting, write it out, you know?
Yeah, ride it out in another country where you don't know anybody and have no prospects and nothing to do but depend on him for your whole existence. No big deal. Great idea. She ends by saying that Billy's just a guy, which like, ugh, this is such terrible advice. I know it's supposed to be coming from like her storyline, but still. Oof. So the next morning, Jennifer is packing and babbling when Billy gravely tells her they need to talk. She's probably noticed he's been preoccupied lately. Well, it's because he got a fax from Allison, his old friend, but Jennifer knows their history. Billy says Allison needs his help. Sam did not even go so far as to say that in the fax, by the way. Like, as Sarah said, she just wants to see him and fuck, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Billy stammers that Allison is an alcoholic, and Jennifer, clip seven.
I don't understand. What could you do for her?
I could be her friend and give her some moral support.
Can I see the facts? Please? I mean, I am your fiance, right? I will always love you. I wish I could see you once more. Friend Billy? She wants you back.
She's emotional, you know? I'm not going down there for that. I just want to make sure she's okay.
I want you to call her and tell her you're getting married.
The rehab center will not let her take calls. What is going on here? You don't trust me? You don't think that I'm being honest with you?
Yeah, why would she suspect you of all people of having an emotional affair that turns into a physical one? Shut the fuck up. Also, red flag that he's like carrying the facts around with him at least one day later.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, clip eight.
I just wonder if you're being honest with yourself.
I can't have this discussion. You know, I'm like trying to do the right thing here, and I thought at least you would understand that.
Yeah, okay.
How, when you make the wrong face, is she supposed to know whether you're being honest or what you're trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
You always look like you smell like you think you stepped in dog shit or you left the stove on. Like, I mean, ugh,
yeah.
Hateful. Leave. Go.
There is a six pack of wrong faces from this scene that you can enjoy in the visual aids. So there you go.
I'm surprised you confined yourself to six.
Moving on to our B-plot. Michael tries to keep Taylor and Jane apart. Hijinks ensue. We pick up here where we left off in the last episode at the beach house where Taylor's in the shower and Jane, who has no idea Taylor exists, never mind her relationship to Michael, is on her way. Michael tries to get rid of Jane by claiming he needs to straighten up his bachelor pad and then, I think, commits a misdemeanor by calling 911 and falsely reporting a pregnant woman who needs an ambulance. As soon as he hangs up, Taylor comes out feeling better until Michael descends upon her with fake concerns. He is getting her admitted to the hospital right away. And he throws some things into a suitcase for her and rushes her toward the siren, saying they got there so fast because he has a special button on his pager. And no, she can't put clothes on. Naked under her robe is fine. He's going to follow the ambulance. Totally. And then he rushes back inside to hide all the baby stuff that Taylor has left everywhere. And I guess they were short in the runtime because we watched that in real time until Jane knocks on the door. She couldn't stop thinking about Michael and knows this is a surprise, so she doesn't have to stay. Although she also brought her suitcase in from the rental car, so it sure seems like she assumes he's gonna ask her to, which he does. She just felt like she was treading water in Chicago, but she feels so much stronger now. She loves California. This is where I wonder again, what was actually wrong with Jane's life in Chicago? Because she seemed like she at least had friends. Even if she was living with her parents, things were going okay.
Yeah.
So Michael babbles at her to go out and look at the ocean while he pours them some wine. But first, one of the things that she missed most about California was Michael. But they can take their time. She doesn't have to live there, and maybe she shouldn't to start again. More assumptions on her part.
Jeez.
Okay. Michael is just about to go out to the deck with their drinks when he remembers the stupid Michael Jr. frame on the counter, but Jane still hasn't seen it as we slam into the credits. And when we see Taylor next, she's in a hospital bed ranting about where Michael is since he said he was going to follow her there, and that was last night. And Coop, examining her, could not care less and says that other than a little high blood pressure, she is fine. And she then decides that since he is the nearest person to her, he might as well listen to her complain about her life. She's been having nightmares and feels like she's having the baby for the wrong reasons, which at this point you're having it because it could about walk out of you. So the time to think about this was 15 months ago.
Yeah. Seriously.
But as Taylor enumerates all the fucked up things that have happened since she found out she was pregnant, including using it to try to rook men into loving her and also trying to die by suicide, Coop's squint of incomprehension is actually appropriate for once. And when she ends by calling the baby a device to get men, Coop says she's being too hard on herself. Not really.
No, I think she's right on the money.
She's acting, talking like a grown-up for the first time in several episodes, but Taylor is scared she's going to be a worse mother than her own, so great. I guess we're going to have to find out what that fucking lady's deal is soon. Ooh. Coop doesn't know what's going on between Taylor and Michael, but he's concerned about her self-esteem. She'll be a fine mother. Ooh, don't know about that. And he goes on, clip 9.
But if someone is belittling you or using you, then you need to stand up for yourself. Damn it, I mean, because the more you let someone control you or use you, well, then the less of a human being you are. And then, I mean, what's the point, huh? I mean, you might as well just give up completely and just, like, throw yourself in front of a bus. I guess I got a few issues of my own in this area.
Yeah, but I see your point.
This lady just said she tried to die by suicide. Maybe don't bring up the bus thing, doctor.
Yeah.
But also, your shit is in the A-plot. We'll get there, Coop. Shut up.
Yeah.
When Michael finally remembers to check on Taylor, it's nighttime, and Nurse Lynn tells him she was released half an hour ago. Cut to the beach house, where Jane is pouring tea next to a huge plate of cookies she then just leaves there to get stale, I guess. And she has just wandered into the bedroom when Taylor comes in. Jane goes to the deck. Taylor goes up the brand new hallway to parts unknown. But I guess there's a second bathroom now. And when Taylor passes the bedroom doorway again, she sees Jane's suitcase open on the dresser. Right before Jane walks into the living room for the deck, sees Taylor's suitcase on the chair. Both are separately inspecting each other's shit when Michael bursts back in. And a clip 10.
Michael, whose stuff is this?
What are you doing here? I live here. What are you doing here?
Jane, you remember Taylor. She used to be married to Kyle. And Taylor, you remember Jane. She used to be married to, of course, me. Okay, so, as you both know, normally in a situation like this, I tell a really big lie.
There's nothing normal about this, Michael.
Right. Okay. So then, Taylor, Jane and I sort of got back together again in Chicago, and we're thinking about making a new start of it here, but Jane, Taylor is pregnant with my baby, and she's staying here until she, of course, has it.
We've also gotten pretty close lately, Michael.
We have not.
Yes, we have. Michael, after all that time we shared in Chicago, you never mentioned that you were living with the woman who's having your baby?
Never came up.
I mean, also, this is a soap, Jane. You haven't been gone for that long.
Great point. Jane goes straight to the bedroom to repack her stuff, muttering that she actually thought Michael had changed this time. And he has, he says. But she's going to a hotel. Too bad for her. She doesn't know Sam, her former employee, whom she screwed over a bunch of times, is now living alone in a two-bedroom. But anyway, Michael chases Jane, saying he loves her. And when she leaves, Taylor gloats. Clip 11.
Well, look at where the truth gets you.
I'm glad that's over with. She never really was your type, was she?
Maybe you didn't hear me before. I used to be married to her. I love her. I will always love her. You, I will never love. No offense, Taylor.
Offense!
Okay.
I get it, but still, you can't just no offense that. It's pretty rude.
Yeah, just leave the room. You're done. Did what you needed to do.
You did. So the next day, Jane and her suitcase return to the courtyard. She gazes around the pool at number 5 and remembers good times there with Michael and Sydney, and then looks at the pool and remembers throwing Sydney and their mother's wedding gown into it.
Aww.
Jane leaves her suitcase and trots up to Amanda's place, where Kyle answers the door. Clip 12.
Kyle.
Jane, what a surprise.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking for Amanda.
Wait, no, you're in the right place. We're married.
Oh, I guess that explains why Taylor's at Michael's.
She is. I don't keep track of her these days, but, you know, things get complicated around here.
They always have. Yeah. Jane? Oh, my God, what are you doing here? Why don't you come on in and have some coffee or something?
Just put some on.
All right, well, thanks, but I don't want to barge in. Actually, I just wanted to let you know that I'm back in town, and I was wondering if you had an apartment available that I could use just for a few weeks till I get on my feet.
Okay, but they're not furnished units. Like, is she going to camp out on the floor without electricity? Stay in the hotel you already checked into, you weirdo. Your parents are rich. Also, like, leave your suitcase in the car until you know that you're going somewhere. What is with this suitcase ferrying all the time? Kyle immediately volunteers to let her stay in his empty place for free, but Jane insists on paying because she knows Amanda would want her to, and Amanda doesn't disagree, even though, like, it's kind of none of her business. And it is so cute seeing Rob Estes smiling more sincerely at his actual wife than Kyle ever has at any woman on the show. Like, it's kind of adorable, actually.
Yeah.
And at the jazz club that night, Kyle is embarrassingly rocking out to Joe Sample, apparently a real artist and not just the name of a person in a template of something or other, when Amanda comes in with Jane. Clip 13.
Well, Jane wanted to see the hippest place in town, but we couldn't get in, so we're slumming it.
You're hilarious.
That was a pretty good burn, and I'm glad someone fit it in, because I was thinking it.
Mm-hmm. And again, so corny, but Bissette and Estes are loving this. It's kind of infectious to see them, like, goofing around together in these scenes, pretending to not be married to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer comes running out from behind the bar to hug Jane and tell her about Italy and Billy. And then, clip 14.
Can I get you guys anything?
Megan, Jane, do you two know each other? Ex-Michael wife number 1, ex-Michael wife number 4.
That's funny. I didn't know you married him.
Well, it was over before either of us knew it.
I'm not going to criticize
didn't
anyone.
Seem like it.
Yeah. I'm not going to criticize anyone for a failure to remember how much Jane and Megan ever interacted, because I don't remember either, and I'm not going to go back and look.
No.
Amanda suggests champagne to celebrate Jane's return. Jane comments that Amanda and Kyle have a wonderful life. And Kyle's not going to do anything to screw it up ever again. I mean, we'll see, I guess. The next morning, Amanda stops by Kyle's apartment to offer Jane a job slash the chance to cover her ass after Amanda overpromised a fashion client. Jane cheerfully lets Amanda know she knows that's Amanda's scam, but she's not opposed. And then Michael's at the door, relieved that Jane has not left town. Amanda leaves before Michael can really get down to humiliating himself, but adds as she leaves that she hopes Jane has outgrown his bullshit during her absence. And then Michael actually tells her the truth about why he went to Chicago and how Taylor came to be pregnant. Clip 15.
I don't love her. I love you. And the whole deal with Taylor is that she has to move out as soon as the baby comes. She knows that. But the only reason she's at the beach house in the first place is because For once in my ridiculous life, I was trying to do the right thing. And I don't know what I'm gonna do if that's the reason that I lose this chance with you.
Well, Michael, there's something that I should tell you too. When we were married, Michael, there was nothing I wanted more than to have your baby. And sometimes I wonder if maybe that would have kept us together. And when I saw Taylor pregnant with your child, I don't know, maybe my maternal instincts kicked in.
That's sort of perfect in a way. Why don't you come out to the beach house, and then you and I can help Taylor through this together? I mean, it could end up being a sort of practice run for us.
Well, think about it, but it would depend on whether or not she needs me.
Well, don't worry about that. I'll talk her into it.
No, you won't, Michael. Taylor and I will talk. I'll let you know how things turn out.
Okay. I mean, right. Hey, we all make our own families as adults, and I'm fine with that. Do a spinoff. It's great.
So here's how that goes. The next time we see them, Jane is accompanying Taylor's gurney into the hospital. Clip 16.
We were at the beach house, we were talking, and the contraction started.
Michael, we bonded. I love Jane. She's great. She's much more understanding than you ever were.
Yeah. Set up an IV, get her pulse and pressure, get a fetal monitor, and prep her for an exam.
The contraction stopped on the way here about 15, 20 minutes ago.
Oh, good. I mean, she's probably stable. It's just a false alarm. But you're going to have to take it real easy until you deliver.
Okay, but if this is the truth this time, I want Jane to come stay with me at the beach house.
Are you being honest, Michael?
Yes. What the hell do I have to do, okay? You don't believe me, ask her OB.
It's all right, honey. We were just talking about you a lot tonight.
Honey already? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, Braxton Hicks, we all watch ER. Come on.
Yeah, seriously. So the next day at the beach house, Taylor's once again acting like a huge child, padding down the hall and just pushing open the door to a bedroom where two adults could be inside doing anything, although in this case, they're just snuggled up, barely awake. And when Jane gets up, I notice there are three little oval portraits beside the bed on Michael's side. I would love to know whom they depict. They are too far away. I am now on portrait watch to see who's in these. Anyway, Jane checks on Taylor, who sniffles that she's not jealous. She likes Jane and Michael together. She knows she doesn't belong with him. She just doesn't know if she belongs with anybody. When everyone's all paired up, all Taylor will have is an infant to rob her of her sleep and freedom. I'm paraphrasing slightly, but like, yes, parenting is a scam. We keep saying it, but
yep.
Jane's a lot more positive. Clip 17.
It'll be okay. We'll take it one day at a time.
Yeah, but then that one day is going to come and I'm going to have a baby who shouldn't be with me and vice versa. You know, some people just, they're not cut out for this thing.
Taylor, listen to me. You are a good person. You are going to be great with any child.
No, you're kind. You're a good person. You and Michael want a family, don't you?
Well, yeah, someday.
You should be the parents of my baby. Would you do it?
Stop. Right now, you are under a lot of stress, and I don't think you know what you're saying.
No, I think I do.
Taylor, you need rest. I am going to go make your breakfast, and no more talk like that.
Whatever you say.
This is Jane's...
They got back together 36 hours ago, right?
It's her fourth day in Los Angeles.
Also, can we flashback, among other first season memories, to Michael, to them taking a parenting class and Michael holding a doll by the foot upside down? Am I the only person who remembers this? Because I remember it very clearly. This is a bad idea.
Right.
All of it.
Yeah, completely. That's all we have for this preposterousness. I mean, again, they're rocketing towards the should have been finale, and I understand pieces are being put in place, but fuck. On to the A plot. Peter and Lexi's horniness leads them separately into ill-advised schemes. Peter is in his office at the hospital, and Mr. Beck lets himself in, and the Venetian blinds cast noir shadows all over his face, so we know he is bad news. He is at the hospital for a stress test before a trip, but he also wanted Peter to know he has two professionals working on that business arrangement they discussed. And Peter thanks him, but Mr. Beck is thanking Peter, remember? Yes, we all remember. It was last week. Peter's friend will be handled in the next couple of days. Peter looks very faintly conflicted, but not enough to call off whatever this is. So the next morning, Kyle and Amanda wake up happily on her fucking leopard print sheets. What would she think about them getting a house? He wonders. She's been thinking about that too, but then she did the math and says, if they pooled their money and sold the complex, they could get what she calls an okay house. Okay, Sarah, as a realtor spouse, please weigh in. I have to believe there's no point in real estate history, even in Los Angeles, that any house these two might get would cost more than a whole ass apartment complex.
It depends on where it is. It depends on if she offers to deliver it vacant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little more intrigued by the concept that the jazz club is considered an item of positive value on the ledger. Like, yeah. That makes, but I mean, not that I want more jazz club problems to be plot points, because who cares?
No, who cares?
But LOL.
Yes.
I think that what we're supposed to sort of be looking at is the fact that they don't already have like joint accounts, but also they abortively got married and divorced already. And Rory was manslaughtered by Kyle while trying to murder Amanda. So I guess they had other things on their minds than opening a joint checking account.
Right. Anyway, Amanda thinks they can save for a year and put a down payment on the house of their dreams and maybe have some kids. I'm halfway with you. But of course, this makes Kyle super horny. And at the condo the next morning, Lexi comes out in her ugly nightgown, which you can see in the visual aids, to needle Coop about the lumpy couch he just slept on. He just barks at her to put some clothes on. Well, she likes to be comfortable, but he's not comfortable, so she should go get a robe. But first, she leans her boobs over his shoulder, reaching for the coffee, and then the cream. Coop gets up to leave, and she stops him, playing with his lapels as she purrs that she likes having him there. He restates the situation. We know. She also knows and promises to behave, and she gives him a dry little peck that he still pointedly wipes off like a fucking dick.
Is there some reason that he can't just remind her, like, I am participating in this fraud for your benefit, but if you don't knock it off, I will stop?
Right.
I mean, I understand why, but honestly, this is not fun to watch.
Or at least just say, if you don't knock it off, I will keep all the money, which is my legal right, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that's true.
Just that. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, we're supposed to think he's playing along because he thinks he's going to go to jail. But again, like, as we keep saying, how would that occur?
Or like, make her write the restitution check and then move out of state with Megan. It's not difficult. Tahoe's right there. Leave.
So remember how Kyle told Peter in the last episode that Peter was not welcome at the jazz club because the writers don't?
Kyle doesn't. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, thank you.
Guess the ban was lifted so that Peter could glare from the bar at Kyle kissing Amanda and then notice a couple of suit-wearing guys who seem like they don't belong, although, you know, just because they're not enjoying it doesn't mean that they are there in error or for nefarious reasons, but of course, they are. Looking nervous, Peter joins them. Clip 18.
I'm a friend of your friends.
We don't have friends.
Oh, yes, you do. Mr. Beck?
You know a Mr. Beck, Jack?
Nope. Oh, come on, guys. I'm the one who started this whole thing. Just want you to be gentle with her, okay? This is not the real thing we're doing here. This is just a favor for me.
Ooh, wrist grab. You kind of heard it. The clip. Peter looks alarmed, but the wrist grab is only the beginning because they are here on business and they cannot be disturbed no matter who Peter is. Clip 19.
You say any more, friend, and Jack's going to get really angry. Now, we're going to be around here for a couple of days. If I were you, I'd stay away from us. Make it really hurt.
Ooh, okay.
I love that guy.
Uh-huh. So later, Julie, the suddenly everywhere office assistant with the Kate Gosselin hair, leads Amanda into the hospital. Amanda cut her arm at a photo shoot and needs stitches. Amanda asks for Dr. Burns or Dr. Mancini because even she knows Coop is worthless. Peter is still on site, practically hysterical when he sees Amanda in a wheelchair as the nurse on duty said was hospital policy. LOL, we've all been in the ER and sat in a normal-ass chair. I even did it when I was passing a friggin' kidney stone. But anyway, Amanda assures Peter she's fine. So he tells the nurse to get a suture tray ready and then runs to a phone to try to reach Mr. Beck and call off whatever scheme they cooked up. But he's out of town and can't be reached. So Peter tells whatever anonymous person answered his phone that our deal needs to be stopped. But he is too late. And over at the Jazz Club, Megan brings Lexi a drink. Lexi tells Megan not to worry about Coop. He is happy and the year will fly by. And Megan also shouldn't worry about them falling back into husband-wife patterns. It's already starting to happen, but Lexi's going to keep her guard up. Lexi doesn't have to tell Megan how men are anyway, right? Megan says she knows how her man is and that's all that counts. Sure, but he's still a man, says Lexi, and one who's always appreciated a woman of a certain class, which is big talk from a woman who was under federal indictment two episodes ago. But Megan says, clip 20.
You want to know something?
Before this little sham wedding to you, Coop and I sat by the ocean and we married our hearts together for real and forever. So as soon as this phony marriage is over and we get a little nest egg out of the bank, I'll be as rich as you are. And you won't be wearing that ring. I will.
We'll have to see, won't we? Oh, would you do me a favor and get me some more nuts? I'm a little hungry.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I think I read that in the men's room.
Then we're at the condo where Coop gets off the phone and confronts Lexi about all the bullshit she just gave Megan. Lexi claims that Megan was going on and on about her great relationship with Coop, so Lexi may have gotten a little defensive in reaction and told Megan all about how horny Lexi and Coop used to be for each other. Coop tries to threaten her about what he'll do if she doesn't knock it off, so she tries to call his bluff. Will he go to Jordan the lawyer and whine that his wife wants to have sex with him or just call it all off so he can get sued for fraud? By whom? Anyway, Lexi says Coop actually will stick out the year because Megan's counting on the money now, and then tries to make it out like he's not wanting to fuck Lexi makes him less of a man. And he gets rough with her again, and she likes it. Clip 21.
Coop doesn't like it when the girls are running things, huh? No, you like to be in the saddle, don't you, Coop? So you can take what you want, huh? But you can't because you're afraid.
I'm telling you, shut your
mouth. Come on, Coop. Shut my mouth. You want to take control of things? Take control of things. Be a man, Coop, or did you forget how, huh?
Well, he didn't. Although Coop didn't learn how to rip Lexi's nightie without exposing her buff bandeau underneath, as you can see in the visual aids. But that's about all I want to say about this, because yuck!
Yeah, that's just a thumbs down on everything about this. Writing, acting, sexual assault used as blackmail, compromise. That's, ugh.
No, yuck. It's gross.
Yuck.
It's bad. So the next morning, Lexi wakes up on the couch to Coop glaring at her from the dining room table. That twisted thing that happened last night, it didn't happen, he says. She shrugs that they both had too much to drink, and with their history, who can blame them? He says she knows who, which is why she goaded him into it, but she better keep her mouth shut about it. She didn't mean to make him feel used, she just thought they were being adventurous. But the adventure's over! Just one thing.
Ooh.
She thinks it'll look better if they put the rest of the money into a joint account for the both of them. Coop assumes if he doesn't agree, Lexi's going to blab to Megan, but Lexi purrs that Megan would leave him if she ever found out, and Lexi wants them all to be happy. He doesn't believe anything she says anymore or what he's turning into. That night, Megan takes a minute out of her shift to breathlessly ask Coop if Lexi is seducing him. Of course not. At the other end of the bar, Peter watches Mr. Beck's toughs lurking at a table and then hears Amanda tell Kyle she's going home and Jennifer should close for him. Literally the same second that Amanda has walked through the doorway, the toughs follow, moving so fast. You can see in the visual aids, I made a GIF. Kyle, the Marine, doesn't notice them at all. And when Peter hops off his stool, clip 22.
Hey, you're not going after my wife again now, are you?
No!
Oh, look out, Camp Lejeune. We got a new no for the no challenge.
I was just going to say, no.
Hear more about that from a recent episode of Extra Hot Great. So anyway, Peter shoves Kyle, saying he doesn't care about either one of them, so Kyle should just leave him alone. And in the parking lot, Amanda drives off with the guys watching, but she apparently does not notice as Peter stands in front of them. He's the one in charge. If they need money, he will give them more than Beck, to which the bigger guy punches Peter in the face. And then the small one holds him so the big one can work the body. Small told Peter not to make Big mad, and, well, Peter catches his breath. They peel out, and at the first stop sign, Small rear-ends Amanda. He motions for her to park around the corner, and somehow she does, at night, alone. Like, I know we think of her as a superhero, but she's not. And Small is very apologetic, and as she gets closer to him, Big creeps up behind her, grabs her, I guess chloroforms her, pulls her into the back of their car, and off they drive into the night and into what was supposed to be the season finale. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Beck's goons.
Yes.
I mean, we're supposed to be rooting for Peter, but like, they're just like, bait it. I don't know. Good line deliveries, too. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. I have to agree with you. They were fun and they were efficient. And they somehow did not draw any attention to them from, you know, anyone who didn't know what they were doing. Least valuable player.
Lexi and Coop together.
Ugh. Yeah, I think that's
actually
fair.
Just Coop. I mean, she's gross, but like, you know, she's like this. Don't fall for it. And if you do fall for it, don't do that.
Yeah. Billy being so stupid that he fell for the fax gambit that is completely transparent and also over-engineered to an extreme degree.
Yeah. And is over-reading into it. Yeah. Billy sucks. Good call. Next time on Again With This, Kyle gets a ransom demand, Coop gets fed up, Michael gets in the middle for absolutely no reason, and Michael Jr. might be getting a new set of parents. You might be getting corneal abrasions from our visual aids, but they are available, like it or not, for every episode of this podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. We are now on Blue Sky at againwiththis.bsky.social. You can email us, hello@againwiththispodcast.com. You can call or text us, 210-920-HO-99, anytime. And get extra episodes and access to our Discord at againwiththispodcast.com/club. We appreciate your financial and spiritual support. I am Endless Nutbowl Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Braxton Hicks Contrivance Tara Ariano, and she is on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, will be a gentleman about it. Talk to you next time.